Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the most fraudulent F1 podcast with Dan, a.k.a. Engine Mode 11.
I secretly moonlight as Helmut Marko at race weekends.
And Blake, a.k.a. Brake.
Echo chambers of farts and idiots on Twitter after races.
It's the Engine Breaking F1 podcast.
Yeah. Episode 33 for all you Alonso stands out there. We believe in the 33. Not sure if it's going to happen this year, though, sadly. But we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Welcome to the Engine Breaking Podcast, the most fraudulent Formula One podcast on the internet. My name's Blake, a.k.a. Brake, former F1 performance engineer, now full-time Formula One content creator, analyst, and occasional podcasting shitposter. Who are you?
I'm Dan, a.k.a. Engine Mode 11. I spent 6 years at Rebel Racing as a senior systems engineer. And now I've just got no clue what I'm doing with my life. So, hey, why not do what everyone else is doing and start a podcast, right?
Yeah. Honestly, we talk it down a little bit. The reviews are actually really kind, and I'm surprised because, like, we're basically the idea behind this podcast was like, hey, man, you like to talk about Formula One? You're like, yeah, I guess so. I was like, yeah, me too. It's like, we've been around a bit. Okay, why don't we do a podcast? So we did a podcast. And despite all of the shithousery and the gags, we do like to add a little bit of insight to the world of Formula One and get a little bit of that behind the scenes flavor that everybody loves. And you guys, we don't really get anywhere else on the internet. So instead of interviewing team bosses, you can just ask us what we think they might say and we'll totally be not wrong.
Yeah. I mean, where else in the myriad of F1 podcasts that litter the universe, how many of them out there have firsthand experience of the Red Bull catering sandwiches?
They're delicious.
That's
it. Amazing. The old canteen though from like 2015 wouldn't survive today. That place was tiny.
But shit. You're sitting in a small little office now listening to this podcast, that's twice the size of what the old canteen used to be. It was not good.
It was probably like maybe 6 or 7 of my offices, which are not very small. I can almost reach back and touch that wall behind me if you're on video. But anyway, speaking of the authority of this podcast, we just posted a clip on the tweeters. We predicted what we're just about to talk about, but we'll get into that prediction. It's kind of like this Nostradamus thing where we're usually pretty good. Are we good? I'm not really good at like celebrating wins. So
you said we predicted it. You predicted it. I was a little bit like, no, I don't believe. So it's very kind of you to wrap that into the entire podcast prediction. But let's be real here. You predicted it. I shot it down.
You said that you basically did the ain't no way.
Yeah,
ain't no way.
No, not again. We're not doing this again.
But anyway, so a little bit about the last couple of weeks, what we've been up to. Dan and I ended up out at the Williams pop-up that was happening all through last week. We played some iRacing. We did some F1 Manager. I absolutely murdered us, and then I had to redeem myself later, but we'll get into that. And I just had a good time. They had some of the show car, which was cool. They had the gaming area and all sorts of other stuff, and it was really cool. Drivers were out there. We got to meet some of the Williams F1 Academy drivers. Logan was out there. Alex was out there the next day. So if you guys went out there and had a good time, maybe they'll do something like that again soon, and we can all come hang out there and meet up and have a little party and steal all the seat time on the racing sims and take each other out.
Yeah, the best part as well is we got a photo of us standing with the 2012 Pastor Maldonado Spanish Grand Prix trophy. Yeah, that was
the thing of legends.
Yeah, we went to the Church of Maldonado.
I had a prayer. I had a prayer, and I said, please let something good happen. It did happen.
We also
had a good time.
A Nicholas Latifi signed end plate as well. I thought, well, yeah, big up Latifi. Thank you for my 2021 bonus.
Yeah, it looked like a piece of crash damaged bits. They're like, this is somewhat noteworthy.
Yeah, sign it, slap it on the plinth, done.
Yeah, done.
But no, it was a good day out.
It was a good day out.
Thank you.
I hope they do something.
Because I'll be honest, we're all friends here. I just tagged along with Blake and just followed him in because he was there to do work. And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to follow him in, just go for a jolly.
But it was an open event anyway, so it didn't really matter. And you got to hang out. You did some video recording. We had a couple chats with a couple of really nice people at Williams. I really had a good time. So maybe something else in that vein in the future, but we can't talk about that now. But
no, not yet. Contracts have to be signed first.
Nobody's signing any contracts. I don't do contracts, just NDAs and and cease and desist. Yeah,
that's all we sign. Yeah.
But during the Silverstone Grand Prix, I thought it'd be a perfect time to go to France. I went to TwitchCon for the first time ever. And I was invited by our Twitch sports guru and a Twitch legend in the background, Josh Bloom, was like, hey, do you want to be on a panel? There was Ash Vandelay, there was Tom, there was Idru, there was Alexander Caldi. And we talked about the future of motorsport and streaming and digital media. And it was super fun. And if anybody's interested, message me and I'll send you a link to the timestamp of that chat. It was about an hour long panel. It was in the biggest room in TwitchCon. And like, honestly, there was enough space in there for a couple hundred people. And I was really, honestly, pleasantly surprised that 50 people showed up. And it was interesting because as we asked them to show a raise of hands, most of them were quite old school fans. So they're old school fans. They were community members or other streamers from Twitch. And they wanted to come and see what we had to say. And it was really interesting because everybody had a very different background with motorsport. And I was just like, if you saw Ash Vandelay's tweet about the swear jar of like talking about sports cars, I was like, yes, please keep going. I love it.
Yeah, it was an interesting chat. I listened in. And
thank you for the love and the support in the chat.
Thank you to Josh for bigging up the podcast at the intro as well. I was like, oh yeah, get in.
Go on, Josh. Josh is a super nice dude, and I've learned quite a bit from him. So we appreciate you, homie. Definitely, I will link that on the Discord and put it in the engine braking and the brake Discord. But also,
listen, there's something much more important that's happened. Like, could you please tell us what milestone have you achieved?
Dramatic pause. Yesterday afternoon, we crossed 100,000 subscribers on Break F1 on YouTube. Absolutely wild. 1 year, 3 months after my first long form video, we've done it. Over 14 million views on the channel, including short form. And it's wild. But silver plaque is coming soon. But I just want to say thank you, guys. Thank you, Dan, for all the love. And you were the first one. You're like, shit, I haven't subscribed yet. You were the first one to share that this morning that I saw. I really appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Stalking you early in the morning or anything.
I think, all right, mate, let's see what them subscribers is like. But yeah.
I tell you what as well, sort of just completely changing tacks. The reason I was up so early this morning is because foolishly I went to sleep last night. Well, I took my son to bed and he's not very well, so he's a bit fussy. So I was like, all right, I'll lay him down in the big bed next to me. And when he's settled down, I'll pick him up and I'll put him back in his bed. That was about 6 o'clock. That didn't fucking happen. I just fell asleep with him. And my wife decided to not wake me up either. So I woke up about midnight after 6 hours sleep and I was just fucking wired. So I spent from 12 p.m. till like 5 a.m. fucking playing Skyrim. So yeah, perfect 35-year-old dad behavior.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's par for the course. That's par for the course. Dude, I also forgot I've got a call after we record this. So we have to make this podcast 1 hour and 9 minutes long. So 60 minutes from now, we can do it. And we can make
it up already because we're already at 9 minutes and all we've done is talk shit.
Now we got 60 minutes left, but let's get on to the news. And I feel like this is that part of season in Formula One where like everybody's bored. The racing's like really predictable. No teams have gotten faster. No teams have gotten slower. There's been no signings, no firings. There's no crazy. Oh, wait. Welcome to silly season, motherfuckers. It's here.
Only after 10 races as well, we got silly season.
To me. So what do we got?
The big news, if you've been living under a rock, and that's fine, look. So Nyck de Vries has been booted out of AlphaTauri and Danny Ric is back in the seat for the rest of the season. So yeah, you sort of said you could see this happening. I did not think I could see it happening and I was surprised.
I've been around the helmet chaos, man. I've been close to the firing lines, man. I've seen men fall and men rise. And I was like, this is totally normal. This is totally normal. I've seen it. I can see it.
Yeah, well, I made a mistake of thinking, oh, they wouldn't do that again, would they?
Oh, totally. But yeah, that's all right. So I like how it's always a close family friend that leaks the information. I'm like, all right, so if you're a journalist and a close family friend, you're like, I'm going to burn this friendship just to leak this news early because my job is more like that means like they know them or something. That's not doesn't mean they're friends.
So the hot rumor is that this wasn't meant to be announced until next week. But de Vries was understandably quite upset. So he got his family to leak it to the Dutch media. That is the rumor I'm hearing as why it sort of was very sudden. So we got a first report in like Dutch media saying he's done, and Danny Ric's back in the car. And then sort of an hour or two later, AlphaTauri announced that Danny Ric's back on loan from Red Bull Racing for the remainder of the F1 season, starting from Hungary. I was on Twitter and the first announcement of this on Twitter was Red Bull Racing tweeting a photo of Danny Ric smiling, saying, when you find out you've got a race seat. And I was just like, okay, that's one way to announce it. Like before AlphaTauri tweeted it or anything, it was just like, oh, okay, I guess that's official then.
He was in the car at the tire test at Silverstone when it got announced.
Yeah. And don't get me started on this because, Danny Ric's at a time that would put him on the front row on during Sunday's race. That doesn't mean a fucking thing.
I love that. Like, to be fair, Chris Medlin did tweet that and he did have a qualifier to say for what it's worth, which means he knows it's not worth anything. But there's some other people quoting. It's like, yeah, totally. Like if Daniel Ric was driving these completely different tires on a completely different track condition, the track didn't just definitely start wet and these are not different tire spec and no warmers and different. It's like, please, like, stop. Don't do this. We can't deal with this. And like somebody was saying, like, yeah, the times would have been for like P8 or something. I'm like, okay, front row P8. So doesn't, pretty much.
It matters. It's a different day, different atmospheric conditions, different test tires, Pirelli set run plan, different spec of car for fuck's sake.
Yeah, it's wild. But 95% of the people in the Twitch chat right now are happy that Danny Ric is back. So let's talk about this quickly. I think we've got the statements from Toro Rosso. We've got the statements from Christian. Christian even alluded that his times were competitive, which is, you know, you have to say that. You were going to say, yeah, his times were absolutely fucking dog shit, but mate, have a go. What could be worse, right? Mm. But you touched on this on Twitter yesterday, the wording in Christian's announcement. It was a very impressive drive, and we're excited to see that the rest of the season brings for Daniel on loan at Scuderia AlphaTauri. The on loan thing is very interesting language, but I think you nailed that on the head.
Yeah, so on the on loan part, a lot of people are like, what does this mean? So Red Bull is a bit fucking weird in the way it does things, and I don't think any other team does this. All the drivers are hired directly by Red Bull, the parent company, and then they are leased back to the teams, which is why previously they've been able to sort of pick one up and just swap them teams around or whatever without it being some big legal kerfuffle. It's just because it's, like a, it's a loan agreement or whatever. So, but I will say it is odd that they mentioned on loan, and they haven't done that in the past, so I don't know. But it's just the way Red Bull do things. The drivers,
it's very deliberate language. It's not you don't use the word on loan on accident.
Yeah.
So I can't read into it any more than you can here, but at the same time, it is interesting. So let's talk about it.
Let's go.
All right, we've talked about comparing lap times from the test to race. Please don't do that, and don't use that as anything objective or meaningful ever. And also, please do not use "he was quick in the simulator" to say that he's good. Now, if somebody's dog shit slow in the simulator, they can still be quick in real life. Now, it doesn't happen that often, but I have seen people that just do not drive the sim very particularly well, and they go drive a real race car, and they're fucking legendary. So it all goes to say that you just can't really use that tool for that thing. And knowing what you can and can't use it for is enough. Now, how do you feel about it? And your short answer, how do you feel about them doing this?
Harsh.
It is harsh.
Harsh. And I say your quick answer, harsh, but then I peel back the layers to this. And the more I think about it and look into it, there's two things. One, I don't think this has got anything to do with Nyck de Vries. I think it was just convenient to kick him out. I think this is more to do with Checo. So they can turn around and say, "Hey, Checo, look, we got Danny Ric in a seat for the rest of the season. Better sort yourself out, because who knows what might happen next year."
It'd be a shame if we swap drivers that are on loan. Exactly.
And another thing I was thinking of as well is, why did they even bring Nick in the first place? I just don't get it. If you're only going to have him for 10 races, what the hell was the point of him having him in the beginning? It just seemed like an emergency. "Oh shit, Gasly's going to Alpine. We need someone." Fuck. Nick, you'll do. Fuck.
I get that. But at the same time, people are like, "Oh, it's super harsh, blah, blah, blah." And I get it. It is harsh. I agree with you on that. But at the same time, it showed that Liam Lawson has done a spectacular job in the junior formula. He's been epic. He's over in Japan in super formula. Kicking names and taking some ass right now. He's doing an outstanding job in that series, which is a specialist series in a car which is performance level between F2 and IndyCar and Formula One. It is a fast car, a specialist series, specialist tracks, and he's showing up and performing, which is a good indication of outright pace and adaptability, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that they hadn't promoted him to AlphaTauri means they weren't ready for him.
As in now, what? As in at this point, and what just happened?
At this point, and at last year when they picked de Vries outside of the Red Bull driver allocation. So
I think putting him in Super Formula for a season is a smart decision.
I rate that decision. So yes, this does seem chaos, and we're trying to attribute it to malice or harshness or whatever else. But they've been quite calculated with Lawson, and I think that they don't want to put pressure on him too early.
Yeah, which is why,
because they've seen what it does to. We've seen this a number of times.
Yeah, and they obviously haven't learned, because they only gave Nick 10 races. Nick wasn't great. I know that. We all know that. But I just don't know really what is the success criteria for Nick in that car. I mean, the car's dog shit. Yuki's only got 2 points. Unless no disrespect to Yuki, I love Yuki. Those 2 points were pretty much scored because everyone else in front of him fucking retired in Australia. I don't know. This is why I'm sat here doing a podcast and obviously not running a team.
Like, who wants that kind of aggro? It's just politics and like shooting from the hip often. I think here's the thing. 10 races, is that enough for a rookie driver? There's two avenues to go down with that, right? Nick is a rookie, sort of. He's a Formula One rookie. He did very well in his attempt. He did very well in his shots last year. But like, he's a very experienced driver with a... That was outside my house.
Who's beeping outside your house?
Somebody's tooting. Experienced driver in a lot of different formulas. He's done well. But like, for example, in F2, he only had to beat Latifi. That's not a particularly strong category.
Whoa,
apparently, he's
steady. I'm not having any fucking Latifi slander. Right.
Listen, he's been decent in other series that he's driven. Formerly is Pure Chaos. I'm into it. Wasn't particularly consistent in that from what I understand. But I just don't. Here's the thing. And I think this is the crux of the problem. I think, unfortunately, people don't put enough respect on how well Yuki's doing. So when they see Yuki outperforming Nick, they say Nick must be terrible. So here's what we extrapolate to this, to go back to your point. If Dan, and this is where it gets interesting. If Ricardo does not destroy Tsunoda, Tsunoda will end both Daniel Ricardo's career and De Vries' career.
Right. So this is a good point and one I wanted to raise with you. Again, we're just two blokes doing a podcast. What the fuck do we know? But what do we class as the success criteria for Danny Ric in this AlphaTauri? Does he have to score points, or does he just have to not be at the back? I don't know.
He has to outperform Tsunoda, outperform in race and outperform and qualify Tsunoda in a majority of the races. But the problem is you still have the question marks over Daniel. And people, I don't think, put the correct amount of respect on Tsunoda. And I don't know. This is my gut feeling, but I think Tsunoda's become quite decent. But he has to definitively outclass Tsunoda in the next 10 races. Otherwise, yeah, that's it.
Okay, devil's advocate. We get Danny Ric in the car. Takes a few races to get up to speed, right?
Sure.
I think everyone's going to give him that. End of the season, he hasn't outperformed Yuki, and he sits below him in the table. What do you do now? You're stuck with Danny Ric in the car. Do you take him back out the car for Lawson? This is why all of this just stinks to me. Like, this isn't a Nick problem. This is a Checo problem.
Yeah, it is. But I think he has to outperform. I think by the end of the season, he has to be on a clear trajectory to outperforming Tsunoda definitively, not maybe, not mix or match. Then. You put the pressure on Checo, and if Checo's still in a slump at the end of the season, he gets the boot. Danny Ric goes back in, then you've got Lawson and Tsunoda at whatever AlphaTauri is called next year. No? I mean, that seems like it's common. That seems like it makes sense.
Listen, I've spoken to Marco, right? I'm going to exclusively reveal the plan. Yuki and Max at Red Bull next year. I'm all about Yuki. I'm 100% invested. Get the little angry, sweary man in that car.
Oh, here's the other problem. Max is an extremely difficult measuring stick to go up against, and there's not so many people in the paddock right now that could go up against him and stand a chance. There's a handful of people tops.
Yeah. The problem with Max Verstappen is that his meteoric rise and entry into F1 has completely fucked any other rookie that's coming into the sport ever again, because everyone's like, why are you not as good as Max was when he first started? It's like, well, Max is definitely not the average rookie driver when he comes in. You know, I think everyone's now out there like, oh, who's the next Max Verstappen? Who's the next Max Verstappen? It's like, I don't know if you're going to find the next Max Verstappen that easily.
No, I don't think so. But anyway, I think there's a lot of variables that will start to unfold themselves over the next months. We've got a couple races, then a break, reset, recharge, and go again. And
Yeah, I'm happy for Danny. You know, I hope he gets his mojo back and he does well. But yeah, this whole thing is just like wild to me.
Yeah. It's not surprising to me. It's not surprising at all.
It's surprising to me in how early in the season it was done. 10 races in. I thought we were at least going to get to the summer break.
I think you're right, though. I think this is more of a Checo thing than a De Vries thing. Mm. And, like, honestly, it doesn't really matter at this point with AlphaTauri, because they've only scored 2 points. They're unlikely to score that many more, except for under attrition. So what's the point? The point is to sort out Red Bull's driver lineup. That is the whole point of that team right now. And it's okay for it to be that point because the car's not good.
Yeah, it's to get Danny Ric up to speed. Yeah,
it is.
You can use it for a season and then
make your assessment.
Yeah, and then say, oh, sorry, Checo, you're out.
Yeah.
Checo's on a 2-year deal, right? So he's this year and next year, but
we all know there's no such thing as a multi-year deal.
Yeah, I think this is like the read between the lines. It's a this year and an option for next year is usually what it actually is if you read the contract. Yeah.
There are typically performance clauses in contracts that go both ways. For one for the teams, one to cover the team's ass, and one to cover the driver's ass. But yeah.
Let's, with Helmut Marko, you're lucky to even get a multi-race deal, let alone a fucking multi-season deal.
Yeah, exactly. Fire it, Will. But let's move on to Silverstone. I think we might end up kind of jumping through some of this because I missed Friday in Silverstone. I just spent a little bit of time analyzing qualifying. And then I spent a lot of time analyzing the race. So I think we can focus on that because there's some actually really interesting stuff in that. And then we'll get into Fraud Watch and Engine Mode Good Boy and our random fandom. Mine's really short.
Yeah.
Well, you had Will. So just a heads up, random fandom is where we like dig into a team. Dan's got Williams this week and I've got AlphaTauri. And you can assume that I've got nothing but great glowing reviews for AlphaTauri after this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. 100%.
Oh my God.
But as we get into Silverstone, someone asked in the chat if AlphaTauri have bought any upgrades. Well, that beautifully leads us on to this point. Loads of teams bought.
You guys are beautiful.
Yeah,
well, ladies and gentlemen.
And if people want to watch live, Blake, where can they do it?
If you want to watch the stream live, it's currently on twitch.tv/BRRR, aka break. But I think in the near future, maybe after the break or shortly before, I think we might start doing the whole stream live over on YouTube. I think we're still chatting about that. And I think it just makes more sense that we have it in its home place rather than on our stream, or we'll both stream it or something. I don't know.
I don't know what you want to chat to me about it for, mate. You're the boss. You do all the streaming side of it. I just do all the beautiful audio recording so I can get your beautiful Barry White voice.
Ooh.
Anyway, sorry. Completely off topic. Upgrades. AlphaTauri did bring quite a significant upgrade to Silverstone. New floor, new diffuser, new engine cover, suspension, rear wing, beam wing. I'm not going to go through all of them because pretty much all the teams bought a myriad of updates. I think the only people that didn't were Red Bull. No, they must have because Checo is running an aero, what do you call it, fence on FP1. So they must have. It's just not on my list. Okay. Anyway, loads of teams bought stuff. Yeah. It's
AlphaTauri. AlphaTauri and Alfa Romeo brought basically whole new packages. It's easier to list what they didn't upgrade. And then a lot of people just brought new front wings, honestly. A lot of teams bringing new front wings at this point in the season.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, which is, just in the middle of taking a sip of my Diet Cola. Disgusting.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it's because it's Silverstone and it's the home race for a lot of the teams. So it's literally just chuck a load of shit in the back of a transit van and deliver it to the circuit.
I'm going to stop you right there. People always talk about Silverstone being the home race and it's, oh, we'll just bring this out. Silverstone every year is an absolute clusterfuck of a race because people are like, oh yeah, no, we'll just like bring that out like Thursday night. And then you're sitting there waiting Thursday night to fire up because some dickhead was like, oh yeah, I forgot this piece for this thing. So we can't build the car now. It's like, I hate you. I literally hope you stub your toe because
you have to
drive
90 minutes to Milton Keynes to the factory to pick up one fucking cable that some donut forgot to bring.
Yeah. You've never done that, have you?
No, listen. I ran a tight ship, right?
Okay.
Silverstone went perfectly. It's all the other fucking races. It was a drama.
Yeah, I'm just gonna like unleash Barry in whoever's house that was and let him just run around and do a shit NATO.
Yep. Everyone bought upgrades. The Friday FP practice. Oh, dogs are very excited about FP. Not a great deal happened. I mean, the only thing to talk about from Friday is where the fucking hell did the Williams pace come from?
I mean, they've been starting to look super quick. Was it just I'm out of the loop because I was in France on Friday, and I did deliberately catch up on qualifying in the race, but free practice I was just like, you know what, fuck it. I wasn't too excited about it, but they've been interesting lately, the Williams, and it's you know, simple as that car looks, and as much as like, you know, we've got a long way to go and our tools are way out of date, they're doing a very reasonable job, especially considering you've got teams like that I think are probably better off, like Haas, AlphaTauri, and Alfa Romeo, that are literally We're struggling to understand what they're doing, honestly.
Yeah, Williams on the Friday took this rare accolade. So every now and again, you'll get a free practice or a Friday or a race or whatever, where a team that midfield or lower just has pace and they just look quick. And you look at the data and it's like, I don't understand where this has come from.
Yeah.
And this was one of them. I said on Friday, I think on Twitter or something, I said, Williams is quick and I can't tell you why or where. It just is quick. They reckon it was down to not being as affected by the gusty winds at Silverstone, because Silverstone's quite an open, flat piece of land, isn't it? So you do get quite a lot of wind shear.
Super gusty. And like lots of those really interesting, like turn six into seven. Like turn seven is this low speed corner, and you go through 180 degrees of rotation. So if there's wind on the track, you will have a headwind, crosswind, and tailwind at some point in that corner. It's everything, and it's always a super fuck.
Yeah, so the general consensus is that they were least affected by the wind, and they just the classic Williams, quick in a straight line.
If you don't have any downforce, you can't lose any downforce due to crosswind. And crosswind is, and here's a really interesting thing about crosswind, is most wind tunnels only go up to 6, 7, 8 degrees of yaw, which is interesting because that's yaw. And then to get really technical, wind tunnels do not have curvature, which is a huge problem for correlation and understanding. And this is where discrepancies between the tools and reality come out, is if you think about a car going through a corner. Just think about the car and look from above, right? And you follow this car from above. The car goes through a corner. It is not only you will have the wind hitting the car at some angle, but the car is also spinning like a top through the wind as well. So you have angles of incidence of wind on the front of the car and the rear of the car are always different. So you have yaw and curvature, which wind tunnels are not particularly good at modeling extreme yaws, and wind tunnels and your tools struggle to model curvature. So that's why stuff like that in those corners and those extreme conditions, people are like, we don't understand why our car shit here. It's like, yeah, because you can't model it. You can only observe what happens in reality. Mm. So there's your only tech tip for the day. I'm done.
Wow.
See you guys later. Bye.
Only took us 30 minutes to get there, but well done. Well done. Regular listeners, that would be a shock to you as well as it is to me. New people, thank you for lasting this long. Oh dear. Yeah, and you can't rotate the model or anything in the wind tunnel because it's on a rolling road.
You can't spin it. You would need to basically have a flatbed in a like a skyhook that moves the car through a racetrack-sized space, or maybe a 60%-sized racetrack, and move it around in this space and have like a global wind. Don't. It's coming, though.
Why don't
it's
we coming. Design a giant 60% scale model, Sky Electrics?
All of the trouble... like all the things you could solve, you could basically do this, have a virtual simulator, virtual wind tunnel, and you get a 60% person to go drive a 60% car around. You just could hit him with a shrink ray.
I'm not a 60, I'm 160% of a person. I'm not 60% of a person.
Yuki boys Tsunoda unite. Yuki Tsunoda's the new wind tunnel simulator driver.
Yes. Yeah, no, he'll do.
Good lad.
But yeah, that was Friday, really, to be honest.
Let's not spend too much time on that. But what about Saturday? And this was another qualifying. Let's specifically start with qualifying, because free practice 3 is also dead to me. But
yeah, I did some notes for qualifying, and my first one is track evolution goes brr.
And as an extension of that comment, which is something I love, track evolution and weird changeable damp-ish conditions go brr. Like we've had what, 4 mixed damp qualifying sessions in a row, maybe some intermediate running, maybe damp track, maybe cold track. We had Australia was cold track in qualifying as well. And when we have this stuff, the teams who are very good at understanding their tires and understanding the preparation needed to get the tires working will rise to the top. And if you have anything like a compromised outlap or traffic on your outlap, you could be pretty much boned. And we'll come back to that point because it's a very interesting point. So what's the next
spoiler
thing on
alert
that?
Is Checo.
Yeah. So talking about that.
Well, actually, no, we don't need to come back to it later because it was fucking Q1, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So fine.
Perez delivered another stinker. And obviously he got absolutely demolished about this on the internet. However, I'm coming to his defense a little bit. and this is what we'll talk about now. I think he was stifled a little bit here, not necessarily by the team, because they weren't to know, but by sitting at the end of the pit lane for so long on his tyres, just basically fucking turned him stone cold. And it was like, yeah, unlucky, you've got to do one push lap on these stone cold tyres. You've got to somehow get him into the window and nail your lap.
I think that's, and I think we're starting to highlight one of the things that Checo's struggling with, and it's
tire
adaptability and tire prep. And I think the team in general, I don't think this is something that's specific to Max's side of the garage. I think the team in general are usually pretty good at getting tires working consistently. But when it's not this when it's not this dry, you know, classic Q1, Q2, Q3 session where the track conditions are just like slowly ramping up, Checo has been struggling in those conditions. And I'm probably missing shitloads of context, but
another little bit of context or something to throw in there as well is, don't forget we had new construction of tires for this event as well. Which, you know, I know Pirelli like to say in their press release, oh, nothing's going to change. It's just a sidewall strengthening. Bollocks. You can't change a single thing of these wheels. We're talking about a sport that is down to the hundredths of a second. Whatever you change on a tire is going to change its performance window and how it operates.
Now, I will counter that at agreeing with you and disagreeing with you at the same time. And the important bit is the magnitude of these changes and the magnitude by which teams can predict a given construction and compound's performance over the course of a season, how well that team can predict that, and how much time it takes them to learn and their ability to learn, versus if you change something subtle. I have a funny feeling that if you didn't tell any of the teams that they changed anything, none of them would have noticed, or very few of them would have noticed, because the variability in conditions and everything else week to week varies more than the significance of that change. That's not a fact. I'm just saying it's a hunch. And I've seen that in the past, with the exception of 2014, 15, when it was like steel belt tires and Silverstone exploding and they went back to Kevlar reinforced rather than steel. That was a huge difference because that was a fundamental construction change. Yeah. I don't remember the exact details of that, so don't quote me. But this kind of stuff where they're like, we'll just add a little bit more here. It's very possible that teams would not have even noticed that was a difference. They would have chalked it up to variability.
Yeah. Well, you got years of race engineering experience and sim experience. So in regards to your opinion, I think you can go fuck yourself.
along with the UK government, Sky Sports and all those guys, right?
It's
one of those things like the magnitude and the sensitivity are super important things. And we a lot of stuff gets lost in the noise. And I can almost guarantee you in the past, there have been times when Pirelli changed something and nobody knew about it. Maybe it was a manufacturing technique or something slightly changed.
Illegal Pirelli testing this week on the fraud files.
Yeah, oh my God. I'm not going to do that yet because we got time crunch. But you know, this is the practical aspect of race engineering. Would they do anything malicious like that? No, absolutely. But like, imagine this batch of tires was made in January. And that set of tires that you're using, you know, before shutdown, they're what, 7-8 months old now, 6 months old. Whereas the tires you're using for the rest of the season, they were made in August. Mm. So, you know, even stuff like that, the age and everything else, I'm not a tire expert, but anyway, I'm going to stop on that.
Well, serious tire talk and Perez and shit housing. Max decided to just fucking drive into the pit wall. And incredibly, that wasn't the most embarrassing thing that happened to Red Bull in qualifying.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, I've got a little bit too much understeer leaving the pit box. Bosh, straight into the wall. Yeah. Silverstone is a pretty big pit lane as well. But
Those walls just come out of nowhere, mate. I don't know. I think he's just fucking getting bored now and just doing it for a laugh. He's just doing it on purpose.
Well, here's the thing. I was streaming F1 Man. I was streaming a pre-release. Frontier invited me to come stream from their booth at TwitchCon. And I'm streaming my playthrough of the Silverstone Grand Prix as Williams to redeem after I fucked us in that race. And like everybody in the chat's blowing up, just like, oh my God, Max in the wall. So I'm sitting here streaming F1 23 from the the Frontier booth in TwitchCon in Paris, and I've got my phone up right here. I'm like, yeah, so anyway, Alex's strategy will stop now. I'm like, what the fuck? It was like, God, I can't do this. You guys are too much. It was easier than banning and timing all of you guys out for distracting me, but it was a great time. And I actually, we'll be doing a little F1 manager stream this week on stream, probably tomorrow. So by the time you hear this, check out twitch.tv/break. Hashtag ad, but hashtag also freaking sweet game. It's good. It's genuinely good. But anyway,
I got my hands on it at the Williams event, and we did our two player trying to do Williams strategy, and we completely fucked it. I think we had one DNF and a last place or something for the other one. So don't hire us for strategies. Yeah.
Mate, all right, just before we get into the rest of qualifying, in my F1 manager qualifying with Williams, it was a mixed wet dry session, and it was a little bit more variable than the session we had in real life that weekend. Well done, Frontier, for that save. That was a really good one, and it was super fun. But I got Alex Albon P2 in the Willys, very similar to what happened in, was it Canada?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, yeah. You know, I did that. And then the race was fantastic. I was on different strategies for Alex and Logan. And it was to the point where we said, you know, it was alternate strategies, let the other car through. Alex was on the alternate strategy. And I told Logan to not let his teammate through, basically. Guess what he did? He took him out in turn 5.
Beautiful.
So I DNF'd both cars because they took each other out.
Yeah, so basically nobody hired me and Blake.
I'm gonna toot my own horn. I did really, really good in that. But I had to have a word with Alex and Logan after that. Mostly Logan. I was like, listen here, swamp son.
Listen.
Swamp buddy.
You need to go real fast and you need to go real left, son.
Yeah, he went way too left, straight into Alex. Son of a bitch. Oh, that's the boss. That's the boss of Daytona, isn't it? Real fast.
It somewhere on YouTube and I thought, that's brilliant. I love that.
That's us one day.
Hopefully. Valtteri Bottas decided to, you know, he didn't want to miss out on the fun. So he decided to run out of fuel, which is something that you're quite familiar with.
Oh, let me tell you about running out of fuel. It's a really uncomfortable feeling. And race fuel, like running qualifying fuel on a Formula One car, is awesome. Here's what happens. You need 0.7 kilos or 1 liter of fuel to sample at the end. And they basically, they know your fuel stash and they say, right, we'll take a sample for control samples so we can, that's in the archives. We'll take a sample of your fuel and compare it to what we know your fuel should be. And if it's different, you're in trouble. That's why you need 1 liter, half a liter for each of those. Now, mass or weight is everything in an F1 car. So you need to make sure you're using all the fuel up in your tank. You're not leaving extra fuel wasted in the tank. And what you will do is you will push quite a lot. So as a reference, when I was at Force India doing race fuel, we needed 0.7 kilos in the car for a sample. And our goal was to finish qualifying with 300 grams of margin or something. So that's about, if you can see on this stream, if you're on YouTube, it's about that cup full of fuel. That's how much sample or how much margin you needed. I got that amount a lot, and you have to measure your out laps, your time laps, and your in laps, and you have to adjust for that. And there's other stuff that can happen, like your fuel bowser, the fuel delivery system in the garage. Sometimes it says, hey mate, I was 300 grams short. So you tell your driver, it's like, listen mate, you've got to save fuel on your out lap. I know you got to prep your tires, but you're gonna get fucked. So save fuel on your outlap. And on after you cross the line, lift out of it, roll it, coast it as much as you can. Do not burn fuel. And something went wrong there somewhere along that line with Bottas. So he got done for not being able to provide a fuel sample. And there were no mitigating circumstances. And that's happened to Sebastian Vettel in Baku years ago as well. I believe he lost that podium as a result of the fuel sample. Hungary, yeah.
Yeah, Hungary. Well, I don't know. There's a funny story about that, but I'm not sure if I'm allowed to actually tell it publicly.
I wouldn't, but no. we'll chat after this. But yeah, so that's race fuel management is a hell of a drug. And it's honestly genuinely one of those motorsport things. It gets me excited, man. Heart pumping. You're coming, the car's coming into the pit lane and you have what's called a collector level sensor. And if you're running down into the collector, which is the last bit of all the fuel's pumped out of the tank into a collector, and that collector is a volume of fuel so that it consistently delivers fuel to the engine. There's a level sensor in that. So once the car's in the pit lane, you should see this level sensor on your data screen just running down. And you're like, yes, yes, yes. And there have been opportunities in Q2 where I had used way too much fuel. Like we were deep into the collector. It's like if they will barely pull a sample out of this if they have to. And then you correct it for the final run. It's a rush. So you're measuring that and then you're reacting as soon as the car's in the pit lane. You guess how much they're going to use by the time they get in the pit lane, by to the time they pull in the box and stop the car. Add that amount and then give the fuel man a figure for the next run. It's a rush. Ugh, inject it to me.
Yeah.
Because if you fuck up, you get fucked and you ruin the whole team's day. And if you save 100 grams of fuel, you save 3/1000ths of a second.
Yeah. My favorite part about all this is the super technical, highly, you know, technology-driven F1 and race engineers and the fuel Bowser man are still communicating with post-it notes. So
I used to do that at Force India.
Writing it down on a little note saying, here you go, here's what you need.
Rick would come over to me with a pad and I'd just write it down on the pad.
Yep.
It was dope. But let's what do we got?
Sorry, yeah, so that was Q1. I think, did Magnussen also not? I think Magnussen retired or pulled over because he had an electronics issue. I think, I can't remember. I didn't write that down.
Something happened. They're having a tough time, man.
We lost Magnussen, De Vries, Zhou, Tsunoda, and Perez. Q2, I don't really think anything happened in Q2. We lost Hülkenberg, Stroll, Ocon, Sargent, Bottas. Well done, Sargent, though, for getting where he did. Q3, McLaren are cooking.
Mate. It's real. Norris had the upgrades the other week. They both got the upgrades this week. This is the real deal, man. This is genuinely a recovery story. Genuinely.
Yeah. Should we talk about it now? Yeah, why not?
Let's
save this bit for the race. Okay.
We can talk about the qualifying performance in a second because I do have a bit for that. So we'll come back to that. McLaren are definitely cooking.
Yeah. I also fully enjoyed listening to the crowd going absolutely mental when Norris took pole for about a whole 20 seconds before Max ruined everything as he always does. Albon P8. Come on, Albon.
Go on, lad. I just love seeing Alex win. I don't know why. I just love seeing him doing well. Honestly, he's a dude.
Sorry, I left myself on mute then. That was professional.
let's talk about the qualifying performance then, right, I think. So
hit me.
One of the most exciting things about qualifying for the last couple of races is that it's been those mixed sessions. Like we said before, team awareness, preparation, traffic management, tire understanding, and driver adaptability are all key. If it was just a classic dry session with a little bit of track evolution, most of the drivers in this series will do very well at that because they're good at it. But throw in some fucking chaos and see who cracks. And we're seeing a couple cracks form. This weekend, Red Bull set the reference as usual. And here's the interesting thing. This is not me. I take no joy. I would much prefer Mercedes. We're literally in a four-way battle for the win and the points. And I would much prefer that Max wasn't winning the Constructors' Championship on his own. I would much prefer that. Let's be realistic. Mercedes' best performance this season was in qualifying in Australia with that weird cold track, weird prep, and they did a very good job. They're about 0.4% off of pole. But right now, they started the season at about 0.6 off pole. They're at a 0.5 off pole, and they've had some shockers and some winners, and they haven't been within 0.5% since Monaco. They've been like worse performance than that. So Mercedes are clearly not finding this. Now, if you look at this trend in terms of gap to pole through all the qualifying sessions, Spain, McLaren, 0.75% off pole. Canada, wet session again, crazy session. Their fastest lap was about 0.78 off of pole. And then, boom, Austria, Lando, 0.4% off of pole. Great Britain, Silverstone, 0.35 off of pole. Over a period of several events, McLaren have clearly been, they started the season, average 1.5% off of pole. And now they're literally, if Ferrari had got their shit together, Ferrari would have been close, but they weren't quick here. And McLaren look like they're on the struggle bus. So it's wild. For the McLaren's third weekend in a row, they're improving their gap. And I think Red Bull performed well. So that was a really strong benchmark that they've been all season. All the other teams, like the other fast teams' gaps. And here's the other thing. Ferrari have had their fourth worst qualifying of the season, despite the fact it's about 0.5% off pole. And Aston Martin are becoming anonymous Martin. They've gone from Miami.
Away.
So they started the season around 0.5% off, and then Miami and Monaco, they were within 0.3. And then since Spain, 1% off, 1.3% off, 0.9% off, and then in Silverstone, 1.1% off. And they're not quick in the race anymore. No. The last couple of events. So
no, but this is a problem, right? You can have not a dig at Aston Martin.
No, because they've done a huge job over the season to find that much performance.
Yeah, but this is where you sort out sort of the big teams from the small teams, as it were, where can you continue that momentum throughout the season and continue it with your updates and your developments and things like that? And we've seen it plenty of times in the past where a team will come out with a good car, like Haas. Some years they've had a pretty quick car, but then they just fade off as the season goes on because they can't build on that and the developments. So I think that's kind of what's happening to Aston at the minute.
I thought you were going to say it's because Haas like start off strong and then they can't put their wheel nuts on their car in Australia.
Yeah, well, there is that too.
That sucks, by the way. I hate seeing that. But yeah, it is one of those things. And it potentially, I mean, when was Aston Martin's upgrade package? Like, have they gone down a wrong path? Because let's put this to be clear. Everybody's bringing upgrades all the time. So the reference is continually changing. The conditions are continually changing. Tracks may or may not suit another car. But if you go event to event and you see trends like this, those are usually meaningful. And if you look at the back of the field, these guys are absolutely fucking chaos. AlphaTauri, Haas, Alfa Romeo, and yeah, those guys, random chaos, random number generator. I have no idea how they're going to perform on any weekend. It's unpredictable. But again, like Williams seemingly making some strides as well in terms of their average gap to pull. Even if you ignore Canada, but even Spain was terrible for them. So they're doing okay. I'd say Williams is doing average and they're getting a little bit more out of the car. Pole is set by Verstappen by just over 0.2 to Lando. Piastri P3.
Yeah, it's wild. A solid performance out of the McLaren boys.
Leclerc was 0.4 off. Sainz just behind him, 0.012. But yeah, Mercedes behind that. Interesting. Very interesting. Mm. Let's talk about the race, shall we? Is it race time?
Sure.
And I'm so fucking happy. Honestly, I've said it. I've talked to Graham Poupere about it. I'm so happy the McLaren is getting good now and Lando's going well. Because I think he's one of those drivers. If he spent his entire Formula One career driving a car which was not competitive, it would be a shame. So I hope they can continue that. And I hope to see McLaren back up to the front. And I hope to see Mercedes back up to the front. Because we've got a lot of excellent drivers. If they're in good machines, we'd be having one of the best seasons ever. The talent in this grid is deep.
Yeah. If you just exclude Max from it, you'd be on to a classic.
Fuck you, Max.
But hey, look, Max is doing well. Good for him. You know, can't punish him because he's winning.
Nope.
So, yes, race start. Max, did it not say post race that Max basically let his clutch out too early, which fluffed his start up?
So he bogged it.
Yes, and that resulted in Lando jumping into the lead, which yet again, the Silverstone crowd went absolutely wild for.
Oh, I love that. The energy.
The energy was
wild. So many British drivers on the grid right now. And every time I was loving it. Piastri even had a look after Max's terrible start. He was alongside and he's like, go on, lad. But they didn't do anything rash there. And it was, Hamilton drops back a spot at, I think it's turn three, goes a little bit deep, a little bit wide. That's right. He collects that. Perez drops back at the start and he's being super cautious. And I was looking at Perez's race position chart. He overtakes one car every fourth lap for most of the race. And realistically, for a recovery drive like that, I mean, Perez starting from, was it 15th or back? No, it was 14th because Bottas got disqualified, I believe. Something like that. If you're in a Red Bull, you need to be on the podium.
Yeah, minimum.
We saw Max win the race from, you know, getting knocked out like that. If you're in that car, you need to be super calculated, super aggressive, and not make any fucking mistakes. But it was an okay recovery drive, I think. But we don't want to have that conversation about recovery drives. We want to have a fucking one too.
Yeah.
If you're Red Bull, if you're Red Bull, you don't need to have two guys that are going to win the race. You can't have two guys win the race. You need a one and a two. And realistically, it's a lot more interesting if you have a one and a two, which are just clear what they are. Mm. They don't trip over each other that much.
Yep. So where are we? Yeah, Max pretty much shoots off into the distance after lap five when he gets the overtake done. McLaren, though, the pace seemed... My concerns was it's all good and well being quick and qualifying, but can you translate that into race pace?
And that has been their kind of thing. It's like, oh, they had a good qualifying result and they just end up anonymous or embarrassing in the race. But this was not that race.
No, it was, you know, they had genuine pace. I think, what were they, similar to Mercedes, if not a little bit quicker?
I think so, because we saw, like, if you have track position over a car that's the same pace, what tends to happen is you lose time defending and the people attacking burn up their tires. Mercedes did not have enough pace. Mercedes did not have enough pace to overtake them, which means they're probably similar-ish. Who do we got on the stream? If you're watching this on video or YouTube, we got a pupper.
Yeah, Peanut has just arrived.
Hello, Peanut. He's handsome.
He's a little shitbag.
Oh, at least he didn't shit all over your house yesterday.
No, but he just jumped the child gate to get in here, so...
Oh, well, he's cute. He can stay for a bit, can he?
Yeah, he's all right.
Good. So, yeah, I mean, their pace is good. Their pace was super good. Let's talk about this one. What was your... All right, so we all know that Magnussen, Ferrari installed the external combustion engine on his car this weekend on Magnussen's Haas. It was a fireball on the exit of turn six on the inside of the track, just parked there. Or sorry, exit of five. What did you think?
Straight, wasn't it, where he pulled over?
I don't use straight or corner names. I only use corner numbers.
I forgot about that. Sorry.
but what did you think when the McLaren pit off of their mediums onto hards at that point? Everybody was on Twitter, and I'm like, I'm thinking the same thing because I was a little bit behind watching it on the train. But what lap is it? It's lap 34.
Yeah,
and they stick Lando on hards instead of softs. And
after seeing how long George took his softs for in the opening
stint. King George.
Yeah. I think, what was it, like 29 laps or something insane? And they were already used at the start of the race.
Yeah,
they
were 31. Yeah, they were 31, 32 lap old tires. Easy.
Yeah, no, I was like, what are you doing? Softs is surely the answer here.
Yep. So here's what I thought about that. And I looked back at it. So Piastri lost out. Piastri ends up finishing fourth behind Lewis because Piastri pits just before the safety car. And the amount of time that you save pitting under safety car is huge. So he loses out. But he had got one lap in on that hard tire because at that point, Piastri pit on lap 30. So he had 23 laps to go. They probably saw George doing that on the softs, like, we're not sure, because George was just as quick as the McLarens were at that point. Very similar pace to Lewis, very similar pace to the McLarens. Piastri does a really good first lap on that hard tire, and they said, you know what, why don't we fit this new hard tire for Lando instead of using a used soft, because we're not sure how it's going to go. We're not that confident that we'll get the same result as Russell does. For example, other laps, Tsunoda and De Vries were the only other guys to start on a soft except for Ocon, who retired after nine laps. So their confidence in that at that point they're like, okay. And they saw that Piastri could go well in the hard. They're like, you know what? This is the safe option. And it turned out okay in the end. It turned out very well. Lewis jumps Russell, and Lewis can't overtake Norris. And Lewis is on a new soft, so.
Yeah, that's as soon as I saw Lewis behind Norris on the soft, I thought, that's it, it's over.
It's done. It's done on the restart. He's going to get goosed after two corners.
And there was, yeah, there was a couple of moments where he came close, but
yeah,
no, once the hard tires on Lando's car took a few laps to sort of bed in and get up to temperature, that was it. And I was like, wow, the mad lad's going to do it.
Yeah, and even Piastri started to close up to Hamilton towards the end of the race as well. But it looks like people that fit the soft tire at the end of the race that were going ballistic on it, it did not have the same performance level that Russell saw when he was managing it. You know, Russell's lap times were solid. They were consistent, but everybody went ballistic at the end of the race. Everybody that was on a tear, like Max got into a little bit of dagging. I think as soon as he had a gap, he backed off because he knew Norris was defending. And it was like, that's fine. But yeah.
Yeah. Once, you know, after a handful of laps of Lewis pushing, chasing Lando, you saw his tires. Oh, do you mind,
wrong
sir?
Button. I meant to hit my mute button. Can you repeat that, please?
Lewis's soft tires, after a few laps, you can see this sort of went off and he just wasn't able to get it done. But I was very surprised. I thought when I saw the hards go on, I thought, oh, fucking McLaren have thrown this away.
Yeah. But that's the kind of thing, like when you see people do that kind of stuff and they get it right, and it's like they knew something we didn't. I love it. That was super cool.
It was very cool. And someone in chat saying that the McLaren race sim in free practice on the hard tires was apparently very competitive. So perhaps maybe they knew. Well, they must have known, because that's why me and you are sitting here doing a podcast and not sitting on a strategy board.
Yeah. But yeah, so let's the safety car, basically anybody that stopped before the safety car got screwed, and especially, so that is Piastri, that is Russell. Russell was not happy about that, but that's what happens when the safety car comes out and people are pushing it, trying to do a one stop. Later, you're going to get screwed. You're going to lose track position to those people. Ferrari, let's talk about Ferrari. So
Leclerc
pit on lap 19 off of a medium onto a hard. So he was like, let me do something different. I'm going to get out of this. I'm under pressure from Russell. I don't have any room to push. Russell's as fast or faster than me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do something different. I'm going to pit now. And he did. He did effectively undercut Russell, because by the time Russell pits, Russell comes out just behind him and then he overtakes him with ease. Mercedes clear of Ferrari this weekend. So they did not have the pace. And that you say they made terrible strategy calls. They could not have predicted the safety car. But yeah, Sainz also pits before the safety car as he's under pressure from Hamilton. And he does the exact same thing. He comes straight through Alonso and then safety car, boom. So yeah, it sucks. They converted a 3-4 into a 4-5 into a 9-10, basically. And they were realistically the fourth fastest team on the track this weekend. So yeah. Mercedes, or anything you want to say on the Ferrari? Sainz got dumped on after the safety car restart. He goes from P8 down to P10 on the safety car restart. So, yikes.
I think by now everyone knows I'm quite harsh on Ferrari. I don't do it for fun, you know, but I think this was quite embarrassing for them to get a 9 and a 10. To come away from Silverstone qualifying, what did they say, fourth and fifth? And you've come away with 3 points. And arguably, you could say the 10th was under threat. So they may have come away with only getting a single point or whatever, a single point scoring car. I don't know. It's just, I don't understand what happened to Ferrari in the race. They just went nowhere.
Ferrari had two problems. One, they were the fourth fastest car. And two, they did not have any cover for a late safety car. If there was a late safety car, definitively they were fucked. And it didn't, you know, you can't predict those. So you can't bank on those things. But they were trying to do their best race, which was making sure they could finish as the fourth fastest car. That was all they had on the table. They weren't going to win this race. They weren't going to be on the podium at all. there was no way that was happening. So it's a bit of a bummer for them, for sure.
Why? What about Mercedes?
It's really tough to say, man. Aston disappear, McLaren are coming up to the front. And we talked about the performances in qualifying, not exciting at all. It's just not.
So I'm going to... Am I going to do this? Yes, I'm going to do this. Right.
Send it.
I'll preface this. And I'll say this is not slander or anything, right? So chill out with your keyboards in the comments. If McLaren can take their car, which was dog shit at the start of the season, and now have two strong races under their belts, what is Mercedes' excuse for flailing around and sort of up and down like a roller coaster? Whereas this is early days, right? If McLaren come through and the next few races for McLaren are also strong, questions have got to be asked within Ferrari and Mercedes and Aston Martin of what are they doing? Like, what? How has McLaren done this?
Mate, 100%. Like, and the questions you have to ask, have Mercedes and Ferrari locked in philosophies into the design, which are too expensive to change inside of the cost cap? Or are they being arrogant with certain philosophical decisions about how they approach designing the car? Or have other teams just started to find some stuff that they haven't yet to learn? And I find that difficult. Or the third question is, maybe Mercedes is not well-structured to deal with the cost cap era in terms of their development efficiency and their information throughput. I don't know. I'm not hedging any of those, bets on any of those things. I'm just saying those are some things that would be very interesting to be a fly on the wall and accumulate enough information to make an assessment on that. Because those are three very real possibilities.
Yeah.
So I think that's, in terms of their race, we talked about Russell. Leclerc undercuts them, but Russell's like, nah, I'm just going to overtake you. Sorry, dork.
Well done, George Russell. I like to, give you some grief about your terrorism tour and things like that. But your opening stint on your softs, I'll give you a big toot for that. Very impressive.
It was a good, bold drive from them, and it was calculated. They're not going to let George just do some stupid ass shit. They're like, if you think you can make it work, here's your targets. Here's what we need to hit to make this work. And they did it. So hats off to them. Hamilton, clean, super clean race with the exception of the start, which is fine. Had a little bobble at the start and then drove it. He got the safety car this time in his favor and goes home to take the podium at his home race. Two British drivers on the podium. Pretty dope.
I believe as well, someone will correct me. I think it's like Hamilton's 14th Silverstone podium or something mental like that.
Man. Mad. Beast. That podium. These podiums lately have been really exciting because you've got some legends and future legends up on those steps. And I feel like the sport is in a better place. We're happier and we're talking about the good things in the race. And I don't even want to talk about Martin Brundle on the grid. Like I'm going to mention that. And if you've seen all the shit fight about that, I don't want to talk about it.
I don't care.
Me neither. Good. That's all we're going to say about it. So just real quick, I'm going to plug my Buy Me a Coffee actually. So if you like the analytical deep dives, I actually do a written report, like an engineering performance summary report, every qualifying and every race for every Grand Prix. And it's on buymeacoffee.com/break. So if that's something that's interested, like the analytical deep dives, do be sure to check that stuff out because I go into a lot more detail. And I love sharing that with you guys. I love having those technical conversations with you, you guys in the stream you guys in the podcast and Dan. But
let him fucking bore you with it instead of me.
Yeah. So let's quickly talk about our race podium predictions. You done well.
Well, yeah, right. I smashed it. I'm claiming I smashed it. Right?
Go on, lad.
I put, for my predictions, I put Verstappen, Perez, Norris.
Good lad. And I love the belief, seeing McLaren on the rise up, saying, you know what? We're going to do it. I went really boring and I did Verstappen, Perez, Leclerc, and I could not have been more wrong. I mean, to be fair, Perez.
We're
fine.
We're putting too much faith into Perez at the minute.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
but my bold Norris prediction came out well as we got Verstappen, Norris, and Hamilton.
Yeah. So why don't we quickly I need to shoot in like 10 minutes. I've got myself 10 more minutes, but I all think
right. let's jet through it.
We're gonna rip through Fraud Watch. So I'm not gonna play the bumper. So Fraud Watch is where we put somebody on.
Not even gonna play the fucking bumper.
Fraud Watch.
Right, bang. Ferrari. Put somebody on.
Yeah. All right, you're in for
you know what Fraud Watch is by now? It's where we slate someone that did really badly at the weekend. Bang, Ferrari. What are you doing?
I feel really bad to do this because I think he's a super nice guy, but like I think Perez is on it for me this week. He's got to step up. He's got the best car on the grid. He needs to get his head in the game for qualifying. He's got a really awesome group of guys and gals around him, helping him to get the most out of it. And I feel like, I don't know for a fact, but I feel like the ball's in his court on this one, and he needs to figure out what he needs to do to get the most out of the car in qualifying so he does not have to do these recovery drives in the race. Because when he does those recovery drives in the race, he does them well, but it's not like he's able to sail back onto the podium every time. So, yeah, and that's... no. And he did ask me when I saw him in at the Red Bull show, and he's like, hey, do you have a real job yet? You fucking joker. And this is not... I like Checo a lot, and I just hope that he can find that because this is
clear. Nice to pick it up.
And that's easy for us to say, some stupid-ass losers sitting on our asses on a podcast talking shit with no impact. So, fair enough. But why don't we quickly move on to...
Oh, who's a good boy?
I am. I'm a good boy.
This is the opposite of that. This is where we put some love on somebody. Again, we think might not be getting enough of it. So give it to me.
Yeah,
give
so me. In Austria, I gave it to McLaren. And listen, Silverstone, I'm giving it to McLaren again. Two in a row.
Mm.
The rise of McLaren. I'm here for it.
We're here. I was going to go with Albon because I'm just super impressed by what he's doing with that car and qualifying and the race. But I feel like Lando getting that home podium, great qualifying, great race, calculated, knew when to take risks, knew when to not take risks. Good lad. I'm really into that. I need to call it very shortly. Do you want to give your very short version of your random fandom?
Yeah, for my random fandom, I had Williams quick on Friday as they were evaluating some new items, new front wing and a rear wing on Logan's car. Interestingly, did not use the rear wing in the end, I found out. Qualifying went well for Albon. Sargeant had a little bit more of a messy qualifying as he had two lap times deleted in Q2 and ran out of soft tyres, so 14th was the best he could achieve.
We can't be doing that.
P8 for Albon was his third successive Q3 appearance.
Go on, lad.
Start of the race was tricky due to the changeable conditions and wind. Team had concerns over degradation appearing high during the first stint. But actually, the tyres held up better than expected, so one stop using the soft and medium tyres was possible. Logan got unlucky with a safety car. Came out one lap after he pitted, but he still managed to finish 11th. But the safety car helped Albon when it came to his stop, and soft tyre choice helped him pass Sainz to finish P8. Williams' best result in a home race since 2015. Third score of the season now has moved Williams up to 7th in the Constructors' Championship ahead of Haas, Alfa Romeo and Alfa Tauri. Williams, you get yourself a big... Well done.
That was a very good report card. I'm delighted for them. And I think he's got some development improvement to do, but I don't think it's terrible. I've got AlphaTauri. They get a fucking F. Seriously, like I'm so frustrated that they're not competitive because their sister team is Red Bull Racing. They should be buying all of the parts they can buy from Red Bull, using all that extra resource to figure out how they need to optimize their aerodynamics and make that package work best for them. But they got knocked out both in Q1 and they finished the race P16 and P17. We talked at length about De Vries, but it's not like Tsunoda did a fucking fantastic stinker this weekend either. So I'm frustrated and disappointed, and I've got quite a few friends that work there, and I wish it was going better for them. That's all I've got to say on the topic.
Yep, let's see how it works out of them. Now they got Danny Rick.
Yeah, let's see. And I hope it's a positive experience because I hate seeing that it's like these knee-jerk, you know, like, oh, this isn't working out, let's just get rid of them. But anyway, I've got a jet, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll see you maybe next week, maybe the week after. Maybe we'll take a little break, or maybe we'll get a guest on. I've got a couple of very, I think, people that you guys would like to hear from. I think Dan does too. So we're gonna start getting into engine braking with guests. I think that'll be super good. And I think that will make some more varied content that you guys are going to enjoy. All right. Tomorrow, we've got a little F1 Manager stream over on the Twitch. So I'll see you guys over there. Anything going on with you, Dan?
Nah, fuck all. I'm not going to lie to you. No.
Send it, mate. All right. Got to love you and leave you. Local butchers, support them. I've just got a chicken from my local butcher as well. I'm going to smoke it tonight. I'm going to brine it tonight, smoke it tomorrow. You guys, look after yourselves.
Yep. Fuck off.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.